Well, we have a very special hour today. I'm glad you tuned in. And welcome if you're listening at WMCO New Concord. Thank you for being with us. You know, we're based in Pittsburgh, and I'm proud that we are based in Pittsburgh and that I've lived here nearly all my life. In fact, I think we share a birth state, I think. Where were you born, Brian? Well, how about if I get a microphone on just for fun?
I was born in Flushing Hospital. How about that?
You were born
in Queens, New York.
Okay, yeah. I was born in Ohio, but we moved to Pittsburgh when I was about 3.5, 4 years old. So
yeah.
I have no memories of Ohio whatsoever. Some people say, that's sort of a protective amnesia where they just keep you from remembering anything like that. But you've written this book. You're probably not tired of hearing compliments about it, but The Paris of Appalachia, Pittsburgh in the 21st Century. It's an amazing book.
Oh, thank you very much.
That is at once anecdotal, yet at the same time makes some historic perspectives on Pittsburgh that I don't think other people have, including some statistics that are interesting, and also proposes some ideas as Pittsburgh moves in. So it's kind of a sneaky book. While you're reading great stories about neighborhoods, Brian is also giving you, as a good newspaper writer would, information to help perhaps afflict the comfortable as they read it, and also giving some ideas. Brian O'Neill writes a column 3 times each week for the Post-Gazette, and it's great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Larry.
What prompted you to write the book? Has this been in you for a long time?
Yeah, I guess. You know, every columnist thinks the book he's going to get away with is just grabbing 40 or 50 of his best columns and writing a preface and slapping covers around it and calling it a book. But my old editor, John Craig, wisely told me, you know, people don't want to read a book they feel like they've already read before. You're going to have to do something different. So it was a long process. It took years. And the original title of the book was going to be I Love Pittsburgh Like a Brother and My Brother Drives Me Nuts. But that didn't really fit after I wrote it. And that's why at the end I have, you know, the first part is sort of the what I love about the city, and then some of the stuff at the end is what frustrates me about the city. But I moved here, as you mentioned, 21 years ago, and I connected with this city right away, partly because I grew up on Long Island, and the first city I really knew well was New York City, and I really liked it. But then when I moved after college to Southwest Virginia, Roanoke, Virginia, most of the time, some in Blacksburg, Virginia, in the mountains there, I much preferred the pace of life in Southwest Virginia to the frenzy of Long Island. But there were all these things I missed about New York. And then I moved to Pittsburgh, and it had nearly everything I missed about New York, but a sensible pace of life. And I just think it's a great city, you know. I call it the third bear of cities, not too big, not too small, just right.
And one of the things, and I guess it's fresh in my mind because I just read, I finished the book yesterday. I read a little bit every day this week, and I read the last chapter last night, or one of the last chapters, and it begins with an anecdote about you're going hunting with a nun,
right,
in Fayette,
Greene County.
Greene County.
Yeah.
And Brian says, you know, their chances of deer hunting were slim and none.
Right.
You being slim, she being
right, exactly.
None. But you made, and this is typical of the book, Brian puts forth a great anecdote about this nun that likes to hunt. But then he talks about deer and how they live and how a typical deer with a well-planted, properly forested area might live on 40 acres. throughout his entire life.
Yeah.
Maybe a few more if the land isn't quite as appropriate for his habitat or her habitat. And you make an analogy that people can do the same sort of thing.
Right. Here in Pittsburgh, a lot of people do that. I think it's in that chapter that I mentioned this friend of mine, Sean, who lives in Shaler, just north of the city. And I said to him one day that I had to go to Pleasant Hills that night. And he said, "Where's that?" And I said, "Well, it's like 15 miles away. Not even 15 miles from you, where he spent his entire life." He goes, "Well, why do I need to know where it is? I've got my own mall. I've got my own watering holes. I got my own church. I got my own ball field. I've got my own library. I don't need to know where Pleasant Hills is." And I think a lot of people in Pittsburgh live that way. There's a guy in Pleasant Hills who could care less where Glenshaw and Shaler is. So that's one of the things that makes Pittsburgh an interesting place. You know, there are distinct neighborhoods. 130 municipalities in the county. We have more police departments than Montana. But it's, you know, almost everything's a double-edged sword. So there's a lot of inefficiencies in having these multiple governments. But at the same time, they give us this crazy quilt region that is fun to live in.
Yeah, and I think unless you've spent time living in another city, you might not appreciate how odd it is that you would view a trip from Churchill, where I grew up, to Mount Lebanon as if you needed to go get a AAA triptych
right.
or a GPS unit to make it. My parents, all while I grew up, they assumed anywhere that was not near Churchill was close to the airport. My first job was in Beaver, and I literally, at the age of 22, took a ruler and looked at a map, and I decided that Moon Township was halfway between the two. So I lived in Moon, and they said, "Oh, that's near the airport." And they were right.
Yeah.
But later, living in Sewickley, they said I still lived near the airport. And now I live right on the Bellevue-Avalon line, and they're insistent that that's close to the airport,
well,
too.
I guess everything being relative, it's closer than Churchill is. So.
But growing up, we never went to, McKee's Rocks. My gosh, that's 7 miles away.
Right, right, right.
And it's just an odd thing to think about. And that's the way a lot of folks around here, I think, have grown up. And the charm of that, I think, may be lost on those of us that have lived here.
Yeah, I think people who move here from elsewhere. The other day, I was at a book signing at a high-tech firm on that Second Avenue development. And this guy sat down, he bought my book, and he was from Russia. And he started talking about all the places he's been since he moved here a couple of years ago. And he talked about how the natives don't even know all the stuff that's here and available. Like he goes to the mattress factory, which is not far from here, which has all this avant-garde art, and it's tucked into the Mexican War streets. And you kind of have to hunt for it to find it. But they've got this amazing art inside the building. And he tells these well-educated people he works with, you know, I was just at the mattress factory. And they're like, why do you want to go see where they make mattresses? That doesn't interest me at all. So, yeah, there are a lot of hidden gems in Pittsburgh. And one of the things I wanted to do in this book was to just encourage people to check them out. And they could be a museum, or they could be this church in McKee's Rocks that makes pierogies on Friday mornings, you know? It's all great stuff.
It's a terrific book. It's called The Paris of Appalachia, Pittsburgh in the 21st Century. And good morning to everybody. The Allegheny Sandwich Shop, old Allegheny Sandwich Shop, where I occasionally have lunch and have the greatest waitress in the world come and wait on me. And there's a place, not that we're endorsing it, but one thing
we are endorsing.
Well, I guess we are. Breakfast can be brought here. Perfect Pittsburgh place, classic Pittsburgh. It's been there forever. They're always at equilibrium. I go there for lunch, and there is exactly one table free.
Right, right.
And then somebody gets up and leaves, so the next people can go. Yeah. They've managed to right-size themselves.
That's right.
Almost perfectly. I don't think I've ever had to wait more than a minute or two at most. And Pittsburgh is full of these places.
Right.
you know, steak and eggs for $2.99, you know, $3.99 with a bottomless cup of coffee. And if you go to them by yourself, and you talk about this a lot in the book, some of the greatest serendipitous conversations that you've had on diner and bar stools
right.
with people about the city.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's, you know, and one of the nice things about the process of selling this book is, and I was just talking to Nick, the owner of the Allegheny Sandwich Shop, about this a few minutes ago before I walked here. My mom always told me to live near the radio stations in case it snowed. You know, in selling this book, it's being sold in places like the Allegheny Sandwich Shop, like when In Season was sold at Gus's Ice Ball Stand, at the independent bookstores in Pittsburgh, in bars like Mulaney's Harp and Fiddle and the Monterey Pub. And I'm glad that's happening, because one of the things this book celebrates is the fact that Pittsburgh is not just another exit off the interstate. You know, it has a really distinct personality, and all these places that give it its personality and the shades of its personality are in these independently owned restaurants and bookstores and bars. And so the fact that they're championing championing my book really makes me feel good, and I'd like to do the same. All these places can be found on my website, parisofappalachia.com.
Now, our telephone number is 412-586-6300. You might have a general question for Brian, which is fine. Maybe you want to ask about what it's like to write a thrice-weekly newspaper column, which has got to be a lot of pressure, I think. Some people say, so what? A couple thousand words a week? Great. nice work if you can get it. But you might. I would be curious if you could sort of complete this sentence. Only in the greater Pittsburgh area can you find, and what's the answer? And I don't mean so much as a specific attraction, but something that is pervasive in our culture, such as the menagerie of chairs that are used note parking spots.
Right.
The other day I was, where was I? It was a neighborhood I don't go into very... Oh, I was right on the border where Lawrenceville and the Strip District meet, and I saw just some fantastic chairs, sort of upholstered metal church chairs, saving a parking lot. If you can think of some of those things... why don't you call us now at 412-586-6300, and we'll talk about those a little bit with Brian O'Neill, who is our guest. We'll also have Brian read a bit from his book. We're going to take just a short break. Our phone number is 412-586-6300 or 1-888-SLV-RADIO. I hope you'll consider calling to chat with Brian. Maybe you've read the book and would like to let him know how much you appreciate it. 412-586-6300 or 1-888-SLV-RADIO. Thanks for being here with us. Brian O'Neill is here. And we were just talking a moment ago about how you would fill the sentence, Pittsburgh, only in Pittsburgh would you find this. And Philomena wrote, overly friendly people, more than happy to give directions, except the visual cues they provide are right. things that no longer exist. That big tree that used to be there.
That's right, where the ice leaves used to be, yeah.
I don't know if you remember this, Brian, but about, this would have been shortly after you arrived in Pittsburgh, I think. Donley Company decided to make an alternative to the Yellow Pages called the Donley Directory.
I remember that, yeah.
And they purchased maps, and that was the, you know, at the time, that was a big deal. The Donley Directory, an alternative, it was full color, it had all sorts of features in it that you wouldn't find in a phone book today. And it's kind of funny because compared to how we find information online,
right.
it's silly these days. But they purchased maps and they put them in the front of the book. And this was the first ever Yellow Pages that gave you free maps. And the maps they purchased were at least 50 years out of date.
Oh, right.
And in the front, they had Pittsburgh attractions. And this was maybe 1985. And it included on these maps Duquesne Gardens, for example.
Oh, man.
And all sorts of other past attractions. And I remember we had a radio program and we invited people to call and talk about nominations to put on that directory. And the phones, you know, went nuts. We had Gimbel's, which had gone out of business right by that time, Boggs and Buell.
Forbes Field.
Forbes Field was on the map. I'm surprised Exposition Park wasn't there. Right. It may well have been. But it was just delightful. And they never acknowledged it. But somebody maybe got fired over that. I don't know. The brand new directory with these old maps.
Right.
Tom, let's see. Only in Pittsburgh can you turn the corner and think you are deep in the woods.
That's true. Yeah.
And that's a good point. It's incredible. Here on the north side, you see deer occasionally walking the streets.
Right.
And you can drive across or on Ohio River Boulevard, and a turtle is there.
And there were those wild turkeys that were harassing the cyclists in Panther Hollow a couple of years ago. Yeah. And a polar bear hit me up for change down to... No, actually, that's not true.
Well, let's listen to a bit. And Brian is kind enough to be here today to talk about the book. It's a terrific book. Please consider calling us if you have an observation. You know, Pittsburgh, the only place in the world where such and such happens. And Brian tells a story in his book, The Paris of Appalachia, about not having a house key on arrival. And this has happened to me quite a lot.
It's a good thing on my street to occasionally get locked out of your house. And I'll tell you why. I live on the north side, which if you live in Pittsburgh, you know it gets a bad rap. The media in this town cover it sometimes like it's Baghdad. But we're on the north side right now, and it's a great place to live. It's been a great place for our daughters to grow up. And one of the reasons is we can walk to places like I walked to the radio station today. And in the book, I want to talk about the joys of the walkable life. The best way to explain what holds us, if I haven't already, is the parable of the garage door opener. My neighbor, Tom Barbush, who has lived on the street since 1976, told me this story. A salesman for an East End printing firm, Tom is an old school guy who quotes the Rat Pack the way some quote scripture. He was sitting at lunch with a client who'd been through a recent divorce and was complaining about how tough it was to meet anyone. Trouble was, the man's woes kept getting interrupted by people walking up to Tom to say hello. So the guy asked Tom how he knew so many people. Tom asked if the man owned a garage door opener. When he said he did, Tom told him that was his problem. He looked at me like I was insane, Tom recalled, but think about it. You hit the garage door opener, the door goes up, car goes in, you're in for the night. How are you going to meet anyone? Tom parks his car at the curb. On a good evening, he may be locked out of the house and his wife, Fran, has to figure out whose porch he wound up on. Or he takes in someone like me. One glorious May evening, I walked home from work and found myself without a key and nobody home. Betsy had taken the girls to the video store to bring back supplies to further distort their thinking. So I left a note on the door and walked down to the bar bushes. Tom pulled up as I arrived. "I'm locked out," I told him. "Let's have a beer," he said. Adding as we walked through the side gate to his back porch, "I've been locked out of my house 3 or 4 times. It never failed to be a good thing." He brought out a radio and this little tour of Pennsylvania he gives. Rolling Rock, Straub's, Yingling, Iron City, and Stoney's. Though only the first 3 brands were cold. When we tuned in the Pirates game, we found they had uncharacteristically scored a handful of runs early and they increased their lead as we listened. Soon enough, Tom's wife, Fran, joined us, along with daughter Kate, home for the summer from Lehigh University. Long about the 5th inning in my second Rolling Rock, the back door opened and my smiling Curran, then 4, came walking out to announce that they'd rented E.T. My wife followed with Claire, then 2, with Betsy apologizing profusely for doing this very good thing to me, and Claire smiling at the possibilities of fresh territory. Invited to stay, we did. Claire stacked rocks and looked for doodlebugs. Kern shadowed Kate and her sister Liz, who just graduated from Oakland Catholic. Pretzels and chips were brought out, and so Liz walked over to our yard to retrieve some chives from Betsy's herb garden, which she diced into a dip. The conversation wasn't important, though it ranged from the multi-million-dollar plans for North Shore development, we gave that good reviews, to Kate's plans to visit her boyfriend in New York. Those reviews weren't nearly so good, but later had to be revised. About 5 years later, Kate married Brian Janes in St. Paul's Cathedral, and our daughters were the flower girls. The Janeses now live in a riverfront apartment downtown. We walked home that evening. I ate a little cold chicken, listened to the last of the Pirates Win, then went upstairs where the four of us got into one bed, and I read If I Ran the Circus by Dr. Seuss. Soon enough, we were all asleep. It was as close as anyone is likely to get to a perfect night. If this world is short of anything, it is of legitimate excuses for adults to walk down the street to see if anyone wants to come out and play. I vowed that night to forget my key at least three more times before Labor Day, though, of course, it didn't work out that way. You can't plan serendipity, but you can plan communities so that casual meetings are commonplace, and those aren't the kind of communities America has been building for the past 60 years. Pittsburgh still has them everywhere.
Brian O'Neill, reading from his book, The Paris of Appalachia, subtitled Pittsburgh in the 21st Century. We'll talk about that subtitle in a moment, but you know, the last time I forgot my key, I have a habit of locking my keys in the office here. Particularly, I also have a habit of being the last person to leave the building, so it's not a good thing when that happens. And also in that habit is watching the door close in slow motion just as I realize my keys are in there and the door closes. And the last time it happened, I had my wallet in there and also my cell phone in there, so I found the phone at the front desk here at the Children's Museum, and I called a cab to get home. That was really, I couldn't get on a bus without money, and I thought maybe I could convince a cab driver to take me home. So I got a cab, and the first thing I said is, I'm afraid I have to tell you something, and you can imagine what the cab driver looks like. And he says, what is it, Larry? And I said, have we met? And he goes, I listen to you all the time.
That's great.
And I said, well, I'm glad because here's what we're going to do. We're going to drive over to Suburban Hospital where my wife works, and we're going to get her key. And then you'll wait, please. And then we're going to drive to my house, and you'll either watch me break in if she doesn't have the key, or hopefully, you know, she doesn't bring her wallet to work, but I think I have enough rolls of quarters sitting on the kitchen counter to pay. And he patiently waited, and business was done. He got a very good tip, although it was heavy to carry. And, you know, only in Pittsburgh.
That's
I think most other cities, the cab driver probably would have sped right off.
That's right. You know, that reminds me of a story I tell in the book when my brother from Long Island came here like 20 years ago. I was taking his wife, he and his wife, through the North Hills because they prefer the suburbs. So we're driving into this cul-de-sac, and a guy is coming from the other direction. He waves, and I wave to him. And my brother's, you know, Long Island. And he's like, you know that guy? I said, no, he was just being friendly. Just being friendly? And he waves to you? I said, yeah, yeah, that's Pittsburgh. He goes, what, you're a human being? I'm a human being? Now I got to wave to you? I can't live here. This is screwed up.
And the interesting thing documented in the book, too, are the numbers of people. And by the way, the book is not limited. We'll talk about this in a second. Not limited to the geographic boundaries that end up defining Pittsburgh in terms of are you allowed to vote for the mayor or not. It's
right.
Really about this whole region.
Absolutely.
Of southwestern Pennsylvania. But are the number of people who are discovering, because they can work anywhere in the world they choose, you know, a few years ago, and I'm not sure if this is still the case because we've fallen out of touch, but the senior most manager for environmental issues for all of IBM Corporation lived in Pittsburgh and
really?
Worked out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And there are dozens and dozens of examples, some that aren't too well known, others that are pretty apparent, of people who, because of the nature of their jobs, he traveled all the time
right.
to different IBM plants. So why not make Pittsburgh his base as opposed to New York? And there are lots of people who have chosen to do it, not just artists and writers and people who you would think of, but also people that live in corporate America just because of the quality of life and cost of housing.
Right. And I've actually met people and talk about in the book, people who have retired here because I've met more than one couple that came here for the opera because they really enjoy the opera and it's more affordable here, and as are the houses. And, you know, they couldn't retire to Manhattan, so they retired to Pittsburgh, and they, you know, they're season ticket holders to the opera.
Yeah, you called them the Rust Birds.
That's right.
You know, instead of the snowbirds that go down to Florida, they're the Rust Birds. If you have a question for Brian, I know it's a busy morning, and we're happy to keep chatting, but I don't want to give you a lost opportunity if you wanted to ask Brian something, even about a column that he wrote or about the book. Feel free to call 412-586-6300 or 1-888-SLBRADIO. You're listening to the Saturday Light Brigade. One thing I got to—you talked about, is it the 20th Century Commission or the 20th Century
Building?
There's a
20th Century Club.
Yeah, the 20th Century Club. And Brian, this book is a fun book to read because there are a lot of puns and some wordplay and an occasional remark that I wouldn't call acerbic, but just gently teasing. And one of them is, you know, we really ought to have a 21st century club rather than a 20th century
right.
club. And the book is subtitled Pittsburgh in the 21st Century. And Brian puts forth some arguments that I really haven't seen. I've read a lot of books about new urbanism as well as metropolitan government and trying, you know, should we merge the city with the county? Should we get our municipalities working more together? And some of the arguments he put forth in this book or some of the data presented, I really didn't expect to encounter in the book. And I think you've done a really artful job of opening up some minds as to how our region could be poised to really have an incredible rebound based on the infrastructure that's here.
Yeah, and in fact, since the book has come out, a local architect, an acclaimed architect, Don Carter, who's been involved in great projects here in Pittsburgh and also Celebration Florida, Disney's special town in Florida, he's writing something where he's pointing out that a lot of these sprawling metropoli, are running out of water. He calls them sand cities. And he's tired of Rust Belt, and he wants to call us the Water Belt and the places like Phoenix and Las Vegas, the Drought Belt. So Pittsburgh is poised because it has walkable communities, not just in the city, but in all these river towns around us, and these streetcar suburbs are very walkable. And as the age of cheap gasoline disappears in our rearview mirror, these kinds of places that were built before World War II, before the automobile became the only way to get around, these places are going to be more valuable. So Pittsburgh has to do some things to have a more sensible form of government for the 21st century, but the physical structure of the cities and the towns and just the natural resources here are great. And the Marcellus Shale, all the natural gas in Marcellus, in the Appalachian region, providing the resources that will bring this city a lot of wealth.
Well, and it's incredible. And one thing you put forth too is, and I don't want to mislead you, by the way, as you're thinking about the book. This is not a policy book. It's just sort of interwoven. I don't know that you intended to go in that direction. I have a feeling it probably just happened as you were writing.
I I always wanted to say something about those things, because that is what drives me crazy about Pittsburgh, that we fight with each other while other regions eat our lunch. And we have, you know, this endless city versus suburbs battle, which I guess happens in a lot of places, but it seems to be a fine art here, and it's pointless.
But one thing that Brian mentions, and this is actually a reason that we're here Saturday mornings, is that people are craving community in this day and age. And the kinds of communities that are provided by cities like Wilkinsburg Wilkinsburg is a city, but Avalon, Bellevue, Dormont, McKeesport, Glassport, Elizabeth, these communities, and there are dozens and dozens of others. People are trying to recreate these communities from scratch,
right,
in
right.
other parts of the world, and especially in the West. But here they are, here.
Right. They call this the new urbanism, like Celebration Florida, which I mentioned. You know, it's their big innovation is having, you know, retail on the first floor and apartments above. Well, you know, that describes nearly every community in Western Pennsylvania. You know, we're just going back to what worked before, and people are finding out in neighborhoods like Lawrenceville that has made a big rebound, the South Side, that, you know, being able to walk out of your house and do things without the car. And I'm not anti-car. I own a car, and I'm not giving up my driver's license. It's a tool, like a hammer's a tool. Sometimes you need one, but we don't have to be totally dependent on the car. And living in a place like Pittsburgh, or any of the communities you mentioned outside Pittsburgh in this metropolitan area, allows one to have a bit of a walkable life. And that's a very healthy and cost-conscious and pleasant way to live.
Yeah, the notion of a walkable life or a self-powered life where a bicycle might be part of it, too. That's the other thing. And I don't think it's mentioned in the book specifically, but our biking community is a good example, where we've got, through Free Ride and Bike Pittsburgh, an incredible amount of biking taking place now. And not just people in their late teens or 20s, but there are folks in their 40s, 50s, even older, riding to work, which is an incredible thing to see.
Right, and it's becoming easier and easier as trails along the riverfronts open up. And that's all happened just in the past 20 years. And when I got to Pittsburgh in 88, there was nothing like that. And now it's everywhere.
Now, we were talking earlier, inviting you to call us if you can complete the sentence or the thought, only in Pittsburgh does this happen. Well, you know, we've lived in our, you know, 100-year-old stack of bricks in Avalon. I guess it's 120 years old, because we've lived there for about 20 years on our block. And we're still the new people. After having lived there for 20 some years. And, you know, Brian's still the new columnist to many people. Because when you look at census data, people tend to stay in Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah, there's data. We have more people, a higher percentage of our people have lived in the same home since the Eisenhower administration, 1960, the end of the Eisenhower administration, than any large metropolis in the country. And that's partly because of all the people who left in the 70s and 80s. Those who stayed thereby become a higher percentage of the population. But there's a lot of stayers here. But they give stability to Pittsburgh. And you know, they have a memory of the old Pittsburgh that they share with the newcomers, and we all come to appreciate it.
And somewhat conversely to that, because of the unfortunate exodus, folks who wanted to stay in Pittsburgh but couldn't find work here, as a result, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette website, postgazette.com, with a hyphen where the Post and Gazette come together, is one of the most visited websites in the country, and among newspapers, it's in the top 25, even though the Post-Gazette itself as a newspaper has, not surprisingly, because we're a smaller city, a circulation right. that is not in that top 25.
Yeah, I think we're, I forget the numbers, but it's something like, you're right, the website, the newspaper website is in the top 25 newspaper websites in the country, and the newspaper itself is like in 40th largest or maybe lower. So yeah, it's we have a lot of readers who don't live here anymore.
Yeah, and folks keep in touch that way. And also, and this is really no surprise to anybody, but in the book you document how when you football games, folks, although they're away games, there were Steelers fans in the stands.
Right, because they're already there. Yeah. Bill Peduto, the councilman in Pittsburgh, described it. We're almost like an ethnic group, you know, you know, when they leave, they talk about the old country. That's really what Pittsburghers are all over the country. They're held together by these traditions, these folk traditions, mainly the Steelers. But, you know, the food and at the airport, we sell the stuff, you know, and it's an interesting place.
And Bill, that's a really good observation by Bill, because it makes you wonder, because our roots and our bones are in the immigrants that came here the 1890s and later all had their own traditions, and therefore their offspring had similar traditions. We really cling to some of these old world,
right?
You know,
and
values.
It's funny, and it's and they're often 19th century folk customs. We had a Serbian journalist who stayed with us, not with my family, at the Post Gazette. She worked during the Clinton administration. She was here, and I remember that because she didn't like Clinton because he bombed her country. But she was taken to this Serbian club, and she came back. You know, she was this hip European, and she was taken to the Serbian club, and they were doing 19th century folk dances that she'd never seen before, you know. And, you know, this to them was Serbia, and it was not her Serbia anymore. So we have, like, preserved almost in amber these ways, these old European ways. And in some ways, I mentioned in the book that this city is more European than some of the cities in Europe
yeah.
that have had a lot of Arab and Asian immigration. We've had almost no immigration. So the European culture still is the dominant one here. It's the American culture, but it is the European American culture that is the dominant one here.
Well, it is something very interesting. And by the way, this is Brian O'Neill, author of The Paris of Appalachia, a very fresh book. In fact, as I was reading it, I was startled by some of the references to things that happened just 5 or 6 months ago.
Yeah,
it's really up to date about Pittsburgh, and lots of anecdotes about the city and stories about people here in Pittsburgh, like you would expect based on the columns that Brian writes, but also some thoughts about Pittsburgh's future and where we're headed. One observation you made, and it is kind of startling, is that our immigration levels here in Pittsburgh, particularly in Asian groups and also in Latin groups, very small compared
yeah.
to just about anywhere else. And it's surprising, given our universities and some of the other attractions, even in Erie, I think you find, I have a feeling proportionately there might be a stronger immigrant community, recent immigrant community in Erie than there is here. And it's hard to quite figure out why. I don't know if you've thought much about that.
Well, you know, it's we were redefining ourselves as redefining the economy in the past 20 years. And the immigrants we do get tend to be smarter and more, or at least better educated than most immigrants, because they are coming through the universities to a large degree. We are starting to get more. I just noticed by sight seeing more immigrants lately than, you know, even 5 years ago. But I think it's because, you know, a lot of jobs disappeared. So those jobs that are done in other metropolitan areas by immigrants are done by natives here. You know, if you come to Pittsburgh, Western Pennsylvanians are serving you in the convenience stores and restaurants and so on. Whereas in another city, not, you know, certainly Washington, D.C., you would not see that.
Yeah, and it makes us strikingly different, the texture of Pittsburgh. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's most unusual because here, if you hear other languages spoken, more often than not, it's older people speaking other languages.
A European language. Right?
Yeah. As opposed to people. It's changing a little bit, but not at the rate that is happening in other cities. Brian O'Neill's with us as a special treat. We're going to take a teeny little break. When we come back, I want to make one observation about the book and also ask Brian a little bit about life as a typist or ink-stained wretch. Which are you? I forget.
I think I'm more of an ink-stained wretch.
It is an ink-stained.
Although there's very little ink
that
I get come in contact with anymore.
Well, we'll talk with him about that in just a moment. It's 8:30 before 10. 8 before 10 between us. Coming up, members of the Fifth Avenue Strings, fresh from Harrisburg, are going to be here to play live during our Youth Expression showcase that begins in our next hour. We have a phone call for Brian O'Neill, who's here. Hello.
Hello, this is Shirley from Avalon Heights calling.
Hi.
I was interested in Brian talking about ethnic representation in Pittsburgh. And last week I attended a City of Asylum gathering. And I know Samsonia Way is becoming so well known for welcoming Wang Sheng from China.
Right.
And currently the woman from Burma. She actually lives in Lawrenceville, I believe, but she was there speaking. And I think Pittsburgh is really in the forefront welcoming people and helping people who are living under repressive regimes. And even out here in Bellevue and over in Greentree, I've had some interaction with the Nepalese families who have moved here. In fact, I'm currently tutoring two women from Nepal. And it's just interesting that Pittsburgh's starting to open up to people from other countries.
Yeah, that's great to hear. You mentioned that City of Asylum project. That's a wonderful thing that a couple of Northsiders just started on their own, bringing in writers and artists who have been oppressed in their native lands and giving them a little bit of freedom here in America. And it's a good thing to point out and nice to see. I'd like to see more of it.
Thanks,
yes,
Shirley.
And I'd like to see it in on North Side, which is your neighborhood.
That's right.
Well,
right. All right. Well, I read your column, Brian, so keep up the good work.
Thank you, Shirley.
Thanks, Shirley. And speaking of that column, is it hard sometimes, or do you still feel like you are bubbling over with ideas?
I know. I don't feel like I'm bubbling over, that's for sure. No, it's, you know, everybody's job is hard. That's the first, well, the first rule of journalism, the joke is, you know, everybody else's job is easier than your own. And the first thing you forget when you get a new job at the paper is how tough your old job used to be. It's a fun job. I'm not going to complain about it. There are weeks, almost every week, I have a tough time coming up with ideas. You know, what I say is, you know, it's easy to write three columns a week. Writing three good columns a week is another story, and I don't always succeed. But there is enough going on in Pittsburgh and in the state of Pennsylvania for me to keep writing. Fortunately, our state government is both incompetent and corrupt, so it allows for a lot of columns.
There, I can't remember the author of the quote. It might be Eudora Welty, but I'm not sure. But it's, I hate to write, but love to have written.
That was Dorothy Parker.
Thank
that
you.
That is the truth. That is the truth.
There's Brian's book, The Paris of Appalachia, ends with this delightful comment. He writes, on the morning our first child was born, I held Karen Claire's older sister, up to the window high in Allegheny General Hospital where the Golden Triangle gleamed across the river on a bright late morning. "Girl, that's your city. That's Pittsburgh. Someday this will all be yours." And the nurse said, laughing, "I see you have high hopes for her." Brian writes, "She didn't say whether she meant my daughter or Pittsburgh, but in either case, the answer is the same. I do have high hopes."
Yeah.
I'm glad you've been here as long as you have and that you've made your life here in Pittsburgh. We're fortunate for it. The Paris of Appalachia is in lots of places.
Yeah, it's pretty much everywhere now. And it's on, you can buy it directly from my website, parisofappalachia.com. And if you do it today, I might be able to get it to you by Christmas.
Yeah, it's a great book. I don't mean to gush, but it's a fun book to read.
It was meant to be fun.
It makes you smile, and it makes you think, too. Brian, thanks.
Thanks, Larry.
For being here.